Good morning. I'm Marcia Beer, and I'm here because I said yes to Harold for doing a dual sermon. So here I am. As I reflect on my life, I see so clearly the turning points, those moments of my life when unexpected opportunities opened up and my best laid plans got derailed. The growing edge, as Howard Thurman said. Through each event, I learned something new, experienced life in a new way, and learned to trust while my faith grew. I've had a lot of practice with flexibility and trusting that a greater force than myself is at work. My life's work, my calling, how I live my life, as I understand now, is planting seeds of possibilities and building places for belonging, growing, and serving. You too might be able to reflect upon times in your life when your plan led to somewhere other than you expected and somewhere you could have never imagined. At the time, these choices, situations, affirmations, successes, and failures sometimes seem quite undramatic. No flashes of lightning, no great rolling thunder, nothing earth-shaking. These moments can seem completely ordinary, hardly noticeable, even quiet, like a whisper or sheer silence. Taking time to look back on these seemingly random events and trajectories is one way that I have been able to discern and define God's call in my life, who I am, how I live, and what I'm called to do. I'm going to share just a little sliver of the pie because I see this moment in my life of my 16th year back in 1976 as a hugely important event that may have set me on the path that I have lived my entire life on. I said, yes, here I am, send me. One Sunday, a new boy came to our Sunday school class, and we were talking about serving or disciples or something, and he said, well, I just got back from a mission trip. Yes, it was a bunch of teenagers, and we went and we built this, and we spent the summer together, and he went on about the work he did, and that planted a seed of possibility within me. I had started looking for opportunities like that that I might be a part of, because A, if you know me, you know I love a good adventure. B, growing up, I was in a congregation with a lot of people who went out and served in many different settings around the United States. And I really felt this was a spirit-led thing. And most importantly, my church family supported my crazy idea, and they supported me financially to make this happen for me. So I found a brand new organization called Missions Outreach, brand new organization, first year in business. And I signed up. I saw that they had a team going to Alaska. We would work in Alaska for 6 weeks together. So without much more research than that, I signed up, yes, I'm ready to go. I received all the financial aid I needed from my church. And I was in Chicago O'Hare Airport waiting for a school bus to pick me up to take me to Bethany, Missouri. And upon arrival, after a long school bus ride, we discovered that the lodging that we were supposed to stay in was not completed. So a good share of our training week was discovering our skills in finishing these cabins that we eventually were able to stay in. And we ate outside under the big oak tree. I encountered my first ticks. Ticks, yes. Not keen on the whole tick thing. But most of all, we built relationships with each other. There were teenagers from all over the United States in this one place, and I had a team of 16 teenagers that I worked with, and we learned about each other, and we spent time learning about what it is we were going to do. We had devotions every day. We sang a lot of songs, and if you know me, I love singing, so this was great. So after a week, 20 of us packed up all of our stuff in our modified 1965 International School Bus, not a deluxe motor coach, and we set off for Alaska. I know that we left Missouri and we went up through South Dakota and North Dakota and up into Canada and across on the Alcan Highway, which in the year 1976 was not a paved highway at all. It was more like your rural rough road in a school bus, 1965 school bus, yeah. We had leaders, Don and Donna, Chuck and Janet, and they were amazing. They drove the bus, they took turns, we drove and drove and drove and drove. It took us a week, because on the Alcan, on the unpaved road, it was about 40 miles an hour in a school bus to get there. So we slept on the bus or on the basement floors of churches, which is why I love youth ministry. I feel right at home on a basement floor in a church. Sometimes we sang for our supper, and we arrived in Haines on our bus, only to find that the ferry that we were supposed to board to get us to our final destination was on strike. So we're at this beautiful church in Haines, Alaska, sleeping on the floor, and I can only imagine what the chaperones were doing. They were trying to find us a way to get there. And they rustled up some bush pilots. So I had my first airplane ride in a bush plane in Alaska. They landed on the water. Well, it was a beautiful ride. They landed on the water, and I remember hopping off and going knee-deep in the beach and then having my stuff thrown at me, and they went off to get more people. But the important part of this trip is I spent 6 weeks living, eating, working alongside 16 other youth under the direction of these four leaders. And even at the time, I remember thinking, oh my goodness, I can't believe these adults have given their entire summer to be with us and help us be successful in our work. It was amazing. Our day began at daybreak. We had morning devotions and prayer, and then off to the work site, where over the course of 6 weeks, we built three cabins. And when I say we built three cabins, we dug the foundations by hand, we mixed the concrete by hand, we poured the floors, and we ended up putting the shingles on all three of those cabins, which I was also amazed that we were able to accomplish that, a bunch of teenagers with four adults. But by the end, I truly learned the joy and cost of discipleship. These cabins that we built are still used today. I did check to see if they're still standing, and they are. And they're in Alaska, and the children from the area come, and they spend a summer there. Having learned the life-changing power of working together, sharing reflections, devotions, prayers, and singing, I would commit to making experiences like this for others happen when I grew up. And I trusted that one day I would have the opportunity to do that. Okay, now we're going to jump ahead 20 years. The year is 1996, and I was the Christian Education Coordinator here at Edgewood, working with children and youth, which is where most of my ministry has been. Most of this work engages volunteers in that ministry, sowing seeds, extending invitations to serve, recruiting teachers, chaperones, drivers, identifying leadership in the church who could help in this ministry. You get the picture. Maybe some of you have gotten a phone call from me. I received a call from Ann Hansen at the United Church of Christ National Offices, and she asked if Edgewood would be interested in piloting a program, a new curriculum called Our Whole Lives, which is a comprehensive sexuality curriculum. And this particular section of it that was coming out was for high school age youth. It was a collaborative effort between the United Universalist Church and the United Church of Christ. And it is an abstinence-based curriculum that provides accurate information about sexuality and that provides the tools needed for our youth to make wise decisions to avoid unintended consequences throughout their life. So to participate, I would need to identify a male and a female leader from Edgewood to travel to Florida for training with the authors. And with the Christian Education Board's blessing, I started to search for facilitators. They would need to commit to the week of training, the 13-week program, and oh, they needed to love working with youth. So I found Mary Shuring very easily, and then I faced a challenge identifying a male. After 3 weeks of searching, asking, and being turned down from all the good men in the congregation I could think of, all very reasonable excuses, work, family, vacation, not interested, don't have time, I came home and I was feeling disappointed. And I was also feeling very pressured by the deadline because I needed to let Ann know if we could do this program. And so I came home, and we were sitting at the dinner table, and I was like, oh, I just don't know what I'm going to do. I've been looking for a good man to help facilitate this program, and I just can't find one.
Yeah? You're looking for a man again, huh?
Right, to do our whole lives, and it would entail going to Florida and getting trained, and then to do the program at Edgewood as a pilot program.
You haven't asked me.
Well, no, because you're already so busy, and...
Well, you haven't asked me.
Well, would you be interested in doing this new program?
Yes.
You would? It's going to be 5 weeks of a week of training.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think you would be really wonderful. And I just didn't want to impose on you and ask you because I do that a lot. So thank you. You'll be wonderful at it.
Well, and then in a few short weeks, I'm on a plane going to Orlando, Florida in July. It's a strange place where your glasses fog up when you go outside. Now, the first order of business for me was to meet this Mary Shuring. Although we were both at Edgewood, I had never met her yet. And the first group activity was to sit in a circle. There were about 40 of us. And there was the doctors and the nurse practitioners and the master's social work and people that had a whole career in Planned Parenthood and me. I was there because I said yes. And after those introductions, what I really wanted to do was to get on an airplane, fly back home, because there was nothing in my little yes at back in our kitchen that could match up with the experience and all the education of all these other people. In short, this was a group that intimidated me. But then the next day, we started going through the entire 26-hour curriculum. And Mary and I became good partners. And at the end of those days together, that whole group that I had felt so intimidated by were the ones that were affirming that Mary and I could do this, that we did have qualifications. And then we started that program back here at Edgewood in the fall. I guess it's just 22 years ago now. Of all the roles that I've had in this church, I think that co-facilitating our whole lives has been my growing edge. It has brought a sense of purpose and a call to a profound ministry to the youth in this church and to this community. You know, I see it as a call, because none of the other things that I did, it felt like I used all my gifts, or really has made me feel quite so depleted when a session was over with. And it depleted in a good sense. I was all in, and I was all in. In the few months that a group is together, we don't spend any time concerned with how many youth are participating, but rather we look to the honesty and authenticity of our participation. At first, we give the youth a lot of information about their bodies, about how things are supposed to work, some basic values, and we facilitators answer a lot of questions. In time, I think it's right around when we start talking about healthy relationships, their curriculum really shifts towards the youth developing answers for themselves through exercises, role plays, and conversations. In a brave space, we help the youth make and refine their decisions about safer sex, choices of contraception, communication, consent, how to end unhealthy relationships, and lifespan sexuality. And there's joy here, too, for me. I feel joy when a group becomes a safe and supportive space where vulnerabilities are shared without judgment. I feel joy in the laughter, tears, and the silence of deep thoughts. I feel joy to be a trusted adult in the lives of the young people. I feel joy knowing that each of these youth take their knowledge and their experiences out into the world where they can share their wisdom with their friends, correcting falsehoods, challenging stereotypes, and bigotry. You know, I sometimes quipped that OWL has saved my life because I found my testicular cancer at an earlier stage than I think I would have before. And I know that the affirmations of the youth, for me, have saved my life when I've really wondered whether I make any difference at all. And I know that that feeble yes 22 years ago has led to other yeses along the way, including us standing before you right now.
So the scriptures are full of stories about God's ordinary and amazing people taking that first shaky step, that meek yes, and trusting that what they can give will be enough to do the work they're called to do. Elijah's experience in the cave on the mountain is just one example. What are you doing here? We didn't hear Elijah's response, but we know he left the mountain to continue his work rather than hiding in a cave. Parker Palmer, in his book, Let Your Light Speak, asked this question. Is the life I'm living the life that wants to live in me? And we ask you, where is the Spirit leading you?
Is it time to listen more carefully?
Is it time to refine your purpose? Look to your growing edge. Is it time to boldly claim and to live your life fully rooted in being and doing God's work in the world?